So tonight I'm going to continue with this long series of talks on Parmes. We're up to number eight already. Now, and the eighth Parmes is resolve. Actually, I entitled this talk "Resolve, Determined to Achieve the Greater Happiness." And this comes out of a verse from the Dhammapada. This is a Verse 290. If you see a greater happiness that comes from forsaking a lesser happiness, be willing to forsake the lesser happiness for the sake of the greater one. One of those pithy statements of the Buddha. So one way you can think of resolve is, resolve is the energy that translates good intentions into action. It isn't like, oh, it isn't just a thought. Like, intentions are a thought. Resolve is like, I'm doing it. It's a different emphasis of a stronger energy than intention. And the truth is, everyone has good intentions. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't have good intentions, right? You know, we plan to practice more, to study more, to help others more. But just thinking about these things doesn't make them happen. It doesn't do much good. My father had this expression. He used to say when he was like determined, he said, "I'm going to do that, come hell or high water." That was, and it expressed the strength of his convictions. You know, it's going to happen for sure. And the thing about resolve is, number one, is we have to think small at the beginning, which may seem contradictory in a way, but it's like it's very wise if you're going to actually take a firm resolve, like, I'm going to do this. It's almost like taking a firm resolve is almost like taking an internal vow. Like, it's serious. We're getting serious here, right? So it's wise to sort of take something the first time you do this that's sort of clearly doable, so that you're not going to get discouraged right away, right? So you might have a resolve that you're going to sit every morning, which is a big thing. I mean, as you all know, I know from struggling to make sure I sit every morning. And you get up some morning and it's like, oh God, I gotta go sit on that chair. You know, it's like it's a struggle. And the resolve is what makes it happen. It's like, no, that's what I'm gonna do, because I've taken this firm resolve. And here's the other thing, of course. The resolve should be aimed at doing something that takes your practice to another level. I mean, you could take a resolve, well, I'm going to sleep in every morning. This would be a resolve, right? But it wouldn't be something that takes your practice to a deeper level. It would be the opposite of that, right? It wouldn't be particularly wholesome or worthwhile. Another thing about resolve is that I think resolve is about taking the long-term view. So it isn't like, I'm going to practice today. It's more like, I'm going to practice for the rest of my life. It's a different feeling, those two things, right? One is like, oh, I can do that today. Sure, everybody can do that. No, I'm taking this practice up for the rest of my life. It indicates the seriousness of your resolve, in a sense, right? You can see clearly that the more you practice, the more you dedicate your life to practice, the less you're going to suffer and the less those around you are going to suffer. It becomes so clear to you that that's true. That's what motivates you to practice, in a sense. want to read. I have some things from various people to read here. This first one, this is Joseph Goldstein from his book Mindfulness, and I suspect some of you may have heard me read this before, but it really points to, it's like, well, how, and the question he's answering here is, how am I, what is it that makes me make that this a firm resolve to take my practice to the next level or to continue, go deeper? And he's talking about, in this case, he's actually talking about virya energy, which is needed to take a resolve, right? So he said, the proximate cause for the arising of virya as a factor of enlightenment is the feeling of spiritual urgency. Buddha talked of attending to these factors as a matter of vital concern and not simply as something to do in our off hours. I like Joseph's calm statement there. Like we could, this practice could be something we do in our off hours. Oh, I got nothing better to do, so I may as well. But instead, it's like, no, this is something that I'm going to center my life around. Right? There are some powerful reflections that remind us of this urgency. We can reflect on the preciousness of our present circumstances. Whether we think of it in the context of many lives or just in this life, we can see and appreciate how rare it is for all the conditions to come together in order for us to hear the Dhamma, and even more so for us to have the interest, motivation, and opportunity to practice. We often think that conditions will always be favorable, but any look at the world around us reveals the truth of uncertainty, from war and violence to natural disasters to our own aging bodies. Wise reflection on the uncertainty of conditions heightens the appreciation of our present circumstances and thus becomes the cause for the arousal of energy and resolve. This is like something we don't think much about, but I think it's really important that we do. It's like, as he says, like how rare it is that we even encountered the Dharma at all. And even rarer is like, not only did we encounter the Dharma, but we actually decided to do something about it and had the conditions in our life such that we had the luxury of the time to actually do something, to actually practice. Think of how much of the world people are like, where's my next meal going to come from? Where am I going to have a roof over my head tonight? Right here in Boulder, there are people who are living like that. In our wealthy world, there's lots of people who, like, I read in the New York Times, there was an article the other day that said, given, now that all those pandemic things that were going on to help people get by are over, 1 in 4 children in New York live in poverty. 1 in 4. I mean, it was like, I read that and was like, what? It was mind-boggling to me. But 1 in 4. And then we think about our society and like people, we always complaining about how, the United States is so this and so that. Man, we're so lucky to live here, considering what's going on in a lot of places in the world, that we actually have the ability and the time to practice, that we have the luxury of the time to practice and to dedicate our lives to this practice. And as he points out, the other thing is we think, well, it's always going to be that way, right? Just like that, tomorrow it'll change. I mean, I think about the Marshall Fire, which was this huge fire. And for those who aren't Boulderites, it was a huge fire here a couple of years ago. Took out 1,000 homes in a couple of subdivisions. And it was like, all of a sudden, 1,000 families, their lives got turned upside down, just like that. Just high winds, a little spark, grass fire, whoosh, burn right through these communities within 10 miles of where I live right now. It's like, could change, things can change just like that. And so it's like, that's what gives us this, what Joseph calls spiritual urgency. It's like, hey, right now I got this opportunity. Let's do something about it. Let's take the resolve to practice seriously. At the same time, this is the flip side of the coin in some ways, but that I always want to point out. At the same time, we have to be aware about not forcing things, not going, okay, well, I got to take this seriously, so I'm going to just, I usually meditate for half an hour every day, but now I'm going to meditate for 4 hours every day. That would be an unwholesome resolve because it probably wouldn't last that long. It would be more like, okay, I'm meditating for 30 minutes every day. Let's go to 40. Something. It's going to push my edge and make my life a little more, whatever it is, just without forcing it. Because otherwise, you turn it into some like striving mental competition with yourself to sort of be the perfect yogi, right? That also doesn't work. Because often it turns the practice into some like grim task that you have to sort of somehow get through, somehow, how to this stuff. Right. Ajahn Sasito in his book Parami has some words to say about this, of course. So this is a gotta get the right page or he's talking about here about how important this is to sort of be honest with yourself as well. Yeah. Wait, I'm in the wrong place. Sorry. Okay. The Buddhist emphasis on knowing through one's direct experience has always felt very sane to me. The Buddhist Dharma is shown not through this is the truth, this is the ultimate reality and the secret law of the cosmos, but as this is what you do to get through the mess. One of Sajjan Sisito is very straightforward. This is what you do to get through the mess. Ever felt like sometimes your life's a mess, right? It's what you do to get through the mess. And it offers an opportunity, a way to explore the mind and step back from samsara, of its turmoil, through the simple expedient of picking up a reasonable intention, forming a resolve, like focusing on the breath, and witnessing how the mind skids and wobbles around that intention with its transient likes and dislikes. So we have to, what he's pointing to here is sometimes we make this into like some big deal, like it's like some gigantic cosmic thing we're trying to do. And it's just sitting there and watching your breath and seeing how your mind bounces around when you do that. That would be a good way, in a sense, to think about the practice. Just do that. Here's another little bit he has to say. This is talking about how, at the same time, this isn't some little minor detail. Resolve isn't a small matter. If you're looking for the best results or the deepest changes, you have to do that with the understanding this will most likely mean working at it and overcoming some resistance, and it require the faith that you can at least try. Otherwise, you aren't going to grow. Naturally, you can develop strong degrees and a further extent of resolve in accordance with a wise assessment of what is needed or useful for you. For example, when you begin to meditate, you might start with 10 minutes and check how that was. If you get interested, you go to 15 minutes or half an hour or more. Then you read a book, you don't start, when you read a book, you don't start out th off thinking that you will read all day and all night, but rather you pick up a book and then look at it for 10 minutes. Then if it's worthwhile, you continue. So wise resolve supports Strengthening according to feedback, interest, and capacity. It's not blind doggedness. It does, however, mean that you put aside the alternatives and stay with your central aim. The end result is a stronger and more skillful mind, but it means getting over the first hurdle. The idea that lasting personal development can occur quickly with little effort. This is the classic problem in our culture. And we think, oh, well, I'll start meditating and I'll see, after a week, I'll see how it goes. As opposed to, as Joseph Goldstein says, well, try it for 10 years and see what happens. It's a different time scale, right? Frequently, we find ourselves presented with many options. So it's more likely that we'll get exactly what we want. It sounds good, but the multi-option scenario can lead to option paralysis. You don't give due time and effort to change in yourself, and you get the ongoing sneaky feeling that if you had only done that or bought that one, it would have been better. So resolve comes late on the list of perfections because you make wise resolution. To make wise resolution requires a mind that has sampled, practiced, and received the benefits of generosity, virtue, and all the rest. Then you know what a useful commitment is and its results feel like. But this whole talk is about, has buts, right? It's like that's one way to look at it. But it's important that, remember I said, we got to be careful not to sort of overdo it. And also we got to have the right attitude. This is, I found this section in, this is Jack Kornfeld's book, After the Ecstasy, the Laundry, which I think is a great title for a Dharma book, right? And this calls this a mature spiritual language. And he's talking about the attitude we take towards practice. When we first enter the spiritual path, we often speak of the overcoming of obstacles, necessary striving, the purification of defilements, and the ardor of seeking God. This language, though it may once have served us, can become excessively one-sided, setting one thing against another, worldliness against freedom, self-will against God's grace, sin against redemption. It is a language built upon exclusion. So what he's pointing to here, I think this is really important, is we don't turn this practice and the idea of taking resolves as like, because I'm bad. I have to, you know, it's like, because this sort of view that he's talking about here, this is the traditional Judeo-Christian view of human beings are born with original sin, that we need to be restrained somehow. You know, the Ten Commandments, we should be shaking their fingers at us all the time. Instead, as he goes on, he explains this. And with the awakening of wisdom, the heart gradually expands to hold the full paradox of life. As Walt Whitman writes, I am large, I contain multitudes. In the mature heart, there arises a deeper perfection that is not opposed to the things of this world, but holds them all in compassion. Our spiritual life becomes more about mercy and loving kindness than about struggles over self or battles with ego or sin. Our heroics become a fearless love for the whole of creation, leaving nothing out. Can we be present for what Zorba the Greek called the whole catastrophe? It's just, he's saying, be careful when you sort of get really serious about this practice, that you don't start pushing things away and excluding things, that you are open to the fact that all of life is the arena for practice, and all of life can be part of your teaching. Sometimes things that are difficult are sometimes the places where we learn the most. As unpleasant and difficult as they might be, it's just that's the nature of these things. So the question becomes, in some sense, this all sounds so simple. I just have to, make a firm resolve and do something about it, right? So why don't we? What is it that stops us? Why don't we do this? Why do we have so many great plans and ideas and aspirations, but so little follow through? It's a question we have to ask ourselves. Mainly it's because we've become experts at making excuses for not doing what you should do or that you have want to form a resolve around. I'll do it when my work is a little less busy or my life is a little less busy. I'll do it when my kids are older. That was one for me for quite a while. When I had two growing kids and a full-time job and a house to take care of. Man, spiritual practice wasn't at the top of my list, let me tell you. I managed, but I struggled, but it wasn't, and it was just like, 'cause I had this ready-made excuse. I gotta work, I gotta da-da-da-da-da. I'll do it in the fall when I don't want to be outside so much. Oh no, it's nice in summertime. I want to be out in the garden and just do this and do that. I'll have more time to practice in the fall. Whatever. We're experts at doing this, and we can have endless excuses for not actually taking the practice seriously. And this is partly because we create lives that are just packed with constant activity. The idea of having unscheduled time, time when we might actually just sit still, is counter to our whole modern culture. Our whole modern culture is like, when someone says, "Oh, I'm really busy," you think, "Oh, they must be important, right? They're really busy people there. Those important people are all busy." That's where our mind quickly goes. And so if I'm busy, I must be important. That's how part of what that fits in. There's always something left undone in our. We have this list of things to do. Like we all have, at least I do. I actually have a written list of things to do that I keep track of and keep modifying and adding things to. An important book we haven't read, some new garden project, or children or aging parents we have to take care of. Need more attention. It can seem like overwhelming, like, oh my God, there's all this stuff. How can I possibly add into that list sitting still and practicing and studying? How can I possibly fit it in? And that's what we have to do. Whether it's like just for our daily practice or going, oh, I'm going to take a day and go on retreat, or a week, or a month, and go out and actually just dedicate to just doing this practice, nothing else. It's a big sort of leap. Ajahn Sasito, of course, has things to say about this. And it has, he's always talking about, as I read earlier, this thing about it's no small matter. That's what I think is like, we have to sort of keep going back to that and going, oh yeah, this is serious. This isn't some simple little thing like, going for a vacation or planning for a vacation or doing anything. This is like, it's the rest of my life, now I'm going to do this. So it's a big leap in some senses. And this is where Right understanding. Or we keep cycling. Remember, I talked at one point about Tao cycling back to the beginnings of the Noble Eightfold Path. We're coming back to right understanding and going that the greater happiness that the Buddha talked about in the Dhammapada is the most important thing. It's the most important thing, greater than anything else. And once we have that understanding, then you can start letting go of some of the lesser happiness. Reading that new novel, or whatever it is that, all those things that we do that make just because they're pleasant. To make space for more practice in your life. And but you need to take that firm resolve, that like, I'm going to do this. No excuses. And here's the amazing thing. The thing that always amazes me as I go through cycles of this and have gone through cycles of this in my life. Once you form that resolve, once you are firm, it all just sort of works out. It's quite amazing to me sometimes. Like, how do I end up here? But it's because I took that firm resolve to do something. And all the reasons you thought that you had for not practicing, they just fall away. It's just once you take the resolve, it's what keeps everything else happening. Once more, a little bit more of Ajahn Sasito here. And he's talking about, here's yet another reason we don't do this. And it's quite useful, I think. Therefore, when we first come to Buddhist practice, we may feel it's about freedom from commitment, that liberation is about openness, spontaneity, and being with the moment. The idea of being boundless and free is attractive. And we can assume this comes around through not having any commitments or aims. People may think, don't tie me down. I'm a Buddhist. I want to be completely open. I want to feel free to follow my intuitions. We sometimes get people coming to the monastery and remonstrating with us, saying that our Buddhism isn't really up to much because we have these petty rules and restrictions rather than being free, boundless, and cosmic. This is the bolder hippie view of spirituality, right? We're stuck in our narrow little Theravada ways, such as, please don't point your feet at the Buddha image. It's disrespectful. Some people take this very seriously. You should never sit with your feet sticking out, pointing towards the Buddha. It's a sign of great disrespect in certain circles. It sounds like school again, right? This is why our times are sometimes called Dharma ending age. Because it's hard to get across some of these teachings in a society that has turned the precious qualities of motivation, respect, and resolve towards material ends and towards beliefs that don't go that far. It's quite understandable to feel, I've had enough of being controlled and driven. Freedom is the opposite from obeying rules and making effort. About forming resolves and following through. This is another way we convince ourselves that we don't, we shouldn't, not only that we don't want to take firm resolve, but that we shouldn't. That it's wrong. That it's going to, so it's counterproductive almost, right? There's another thing I want to talk about, one more thing I'd like to consider. What does it mean to have complete resolve? To dedicate your entire life to the practice. What does that mean? And that's a pretty big question, I think, actually. So in traditional Theravada cultures, the answer is really simple. You become a monastic, taking vows and becoming a monastic. a monk or a nun. But as these teachings have come to the West, the traditional teaching has pretty much been taken over, not completely, but 95%, I'd say, if not more, by householders, people like you and me. You know, we have obligations in the world and in our community. We have jobs and families and responsibilities, and we have life as a householder. We haven't gone into the seclusion of monastic life. So how do we as householders think about complete resolve? What does that mean even for someone who's not taken vows and become a monastic? And I'm not, by the way, saying in any sense that you should all rush out and take vows. Having never done that myself, and to be honest with you, I'd probably make a terrible monk. For one thing, not eating after noon would kill me. You know, they have very strict vows that are about monks. What does this mean for householders? And be honest, for me, this is an open question. It's pretty. I haven't come back to. I haven't got to the point where I understand this completely at all. I'm still trying to figure out what having complete resolve looks like at the same time that I'm a householder living in the world and having the responsibilities I have in the world. But for me, it's been more like taking a look at my life and seeing what I've given up. What I still need to give up, for that matter. What I have to let go to have more time to practice. It's a pretty big place where we have to think. For instance, people talk about, my family is my class. I have a brother and a sister who travel all over the world all the time. But people think of going on vacation, like, you know, going to some place where you lie on the beach for a couple of weeks, or you go hiking in the mountains, or you go to Spain, or, you know, and those sorts of things. I haven't been on a vacation in that sense probably 15 years. I just don't do it. My wife and I take what we jokingly call mini vacations. We'll go someplace for a couple of nights in Colorado, so we don't have to drive that far. We'll spend a couple of days doing something. Maybe we'll go off to California to visit my son and hang out there for a couple of days and then come back. But that's about it. It's like, neither of us feel the need to sort of take a break. I mean, the whole idea of vacation is you take a break from your normal life. Go and do something exotic or go see something new and exciting. It just doesn't work for me. It doesn't appeal to me at all anymore. I don't want to sound boastful, but it's just like, that's what's happened for me. You know, and for a long time, and actually more recently too, if I have a big chunk of time and I'm going to go do something, I go on a retreat. I go someplace and sit for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks or a month or whatever. Not so much months anymore, but that's what I want to do. If I'm going to take a big chunk of time away from everything else, that's how I want to spend that time, going deeper into practice. And it's not that I wouldn't like, I'm an artist, a painter, right? I would love to go to Europe and sort of go hang out in the Prado for a couple of days and Quai d'Orsay for a couple of days and the Louvre for a couple of days and just sort of absorb all that art. But the drive to do that is way less powerful for me than finding time to practice. And so But does this mean I have complete resolve? No, absolutely not. I don't think so. It means I'm somehow or other over my life, I've taken these little steps that gradually have moved towards more time for practice and study, less time for other things. And that's all that's happened. And I think that as householders, that's what we do. We take small steps instead of giant steps. A little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And all I've ever done is just taken small steps. That's quite clear to me as well. That's all I've ever done. And so, is that a good answer to what's complete resolve? No. But it's the best one I have given my own experience. And maybe you have different answers to that question. But I think it is more constantly looking at your life and going, well, I can do this, I can do that. This leads towards a deeper understanding of the Dhamma and more practice. This leads to less. Oh, well, I'm going to move towards the greater happiness and let go of the lesser happiness. That quote from the Dhammapada I read at the beginning. Some more from Ajahn Sisito here. This is where he's this is this chapter he actually wrote on resolve. And it's I think he actually sums this up quite well. Over time, my resolve energy has simplified and calmed to one of sustaining the attitude. May this action or thought be for my welfare, the welfare of others, and lead to peace. That's it. May this action or thought be for my welfare, the welfare of others, and lead to peace. Compared with the more extreme practices, such a resolve doesn't make the headlines. Doesn't sound like a big deal, right? But it is. This is a huge deal. But it acts as a life commitment and a basis for eternal action, inquiry, and insight. This resolve doesn't make a self out of intention or results. It just holds experience carefully and lets it pass through and dissolve. That's a great description of this practice, and I think in some ways, this resolve doesn't let self out of make a self out of intention or results. It just holds experience carefully and lets it pass through and dissolve. This is beautiful and selfless. The self doesn't do it. Parami does. In this way, when resolve widens through compassion and wisdom into self-surrender, we can liberate all the beings that arise in consciousness. Whether they arise from an internal or external source, we work to free them from aversion, indulgence, indifference, and identification. May our resolve open us to the great heart that crosses the floods. And a little bit of poetry, just to say this in a slightly different way. Since I'm sure some of you've probably read, heard me, many of you have heard me read this poem before, but it's one of my favorites. So this is from Dana Fald's book, Going In, and it's called Awakening Now. Why wait for your awakening? The moment your eyes are open, seize the day. Would you hold back when the beloved beckons? Would you deliver your litany of sins like a child's collection of seashells, prized and labeled? No, I can't step across the threshold, you say, eyes downcast. I'm not worthy. I'm afraid, and my motives aren't pure. I'm not perfect, and surely I haven't practiced nearly enough. My meditation isn't deep, and my prayers are sometimes insincere. I still chew my fingernails, and the refrigerator isn't clean. Do you value your reasons for staying small more than the light shining through the open door? Forgive yourself. Now is the only time you have to be whole. Now is the sole moment that exists to live in the light of your true self. Perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. Please, oh please, don't continue to believe in your disbelief. This is the day of your awakening. The key line there is perfection is not a prerequisite for anything but pain. If you think you have to, somehow you're going to be perfect, or you have to be perfect, or that's what's happening, though that is what is happening, but it's like, don't judge yourself as I'm not perfect yet, so I couldn't be doing this right. Just let it evolve over time. That's all we can ever do. So just find the time to practice. Take a firm resolve to practice more. You'll be so surprised how easy it is once you actually do it. Just do it. That's what we have to do. And it's like enough of good intentions. Now we need firm resolve. That's why this parami comes so late in the list. I mean, we've looked at all those other things, and now you really understand what the practice is all about. Now, let's get serious, really serious. That's what we have to do. And I'm not for any in one sense at all saying, well, this is easy, we should all just do this tomorrow. This is hard work, and we have to make those choices as we go along in our life.